Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standard Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standig. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means, I don't know, for this place, today was a fairly normal day. On Thursday, we did have a chance to chat with the newest Commanders, including quarterback Jacoby Brissett. Speaking of Jacoby Brissett, I had a chance to chat with our Cleveland Browns insider, Zach Jackson, at Akron Jackson. On Twitter, to get his view of Jacoby Brissett. He, was, of course, covered him last year. Some trying circumstances as Brissett was brought in to be sort of the, you know, emergency fill-in quarterback with Deshaun Watson suspended. So it got Zach's view of what Washington's getting. If he's surprised about the money, what kind of quarterback he is, what kind of a locker room guy he is, all that. So we'll get to all that in a few moments here on the Standard Room Only podcast. But I do also want to share with you guys kind of just like the quick view of where we are with Washington, you know, almost a week into free agency here. So I'll do that in a second. For the podcast, of course, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. And of course, The Athletic as well. It feels like we've been writing a lot this week, because there's obviously been a ton happening. And I'll have a new story up Friday morning about the quarterback situation. I guess I will just say, I'll just sort of tease it to say, it is weird to look at this situation both optimistically and skeptically and be reasonable to do so both ways. And I think that's what I tried to do here with the situation with Jacoby Brissett and Sam Howell. In any event, and of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Ben Standig. And, you know, I definitely appreciate when everybody's has a moment to drop a rating and a review on iTunes or Spotify. And needless to say, I greatly appreciate everybody just constantly checking out the podcast, hitting me up on Twitter. It is greatly appreciated for sure. All right, let's just go through the positions here just briefly. I'll probably have more on this on the website next week. But obviously at quarterback, Jacoby Brissett joins Sam Howell. I would imagine a third quarterback comes at some point. I don't know if that's elevating Jake Fromm or drafting somebody on day three. That's not the story, of course. The story is, you know, who's going to start a quarterback? I can't say that, like, there's been any statement or view of this from the team one way or the other than to say Sam Howell, I believe, is still being viewed as that guy. Now, when we started all this in January, you know, the way I was looking at it and talked to you guys about this, it, you know, I just skipped past the big money guys and went straight to the kind of level that we're talking about here. Somebody who's a sort of a spot starter, but backup type guy. That would make the most sense. Once they declared Sam Howell was going to be, you know, essentially QB1 entering the offseason. But Brissett and Andy Dalton were the two names I've always been saying, boy, that's going to be tougher to control a competition because those guys, in theory, should beat out Sam Howell. Based on experience, that is unless Sam Howell just crushes it, which is, of course, the best-case scenario because of his, you know, the upside, his youth, his salary, and that he's on the books through 2025 as a cheap quarterback. That would be amazing for sure. Brissett today did not give us any indication as to whether he thinks he's the starter or the backup, but I guess it feels like he is going to, you know, enter camp behind Howell, but we'll see. We haven't talked to Rivera about this. We will presumably get Rivera at the owner's meeting later this month. I will be there, of course. There will be bigger news to deal with than who's starting at quarterback at that. But nonetheless, that will be something to keep an eye on. So, all right, running back. Obviously, they released J.D. McKissic this week. You know, obviously, hopefully J.D. is okay, whatever he chooses to do. as far as what they do from there, you know, as I've told you guys before, my view is if Ron Rivera is going to claim that when Brian Robinson got hurt, they kind of had to go off the run game, but they want to be a running team, then they need a third back to be that guy. Antonio Gibson can catch plenty of passes. I don't think they have to get a J.D. McKissic replacement. Now, you also have Jared Patterson, and I'm not saying you can't add that guy, but I'm just saying, to me, it would not be anybody you're spending any real kind of money on. It would be a very cheap free agent or some kind of draft choice. And you know, in terms of the draft choice, let's not forget that Antonio Gibson isn't entering the final year of his contract, right? So we'll see where that goes. That's a whole other topic for down the line. So, yes, I can see them adding another running back, but I wouldn't expect it to be any kind of, I don't want to say notable name because, you know, we'll have to see how the market unfolds. I just don't see them making a big investment at this point into that, for sure. Now, wide receiver. Okay, so they added Marcus Kemp, you know, a few weeks ago, right after Eric Bieniemy showed up, a Chiefs wide receiver. When you factor in Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, Jahan Dodson, and De'Ami Brown, that would be four. If they keep six, the two other guys were Cam Sims and Dax Mills. Dax Milne, I already hear everybody here saying get rid of Dax Milne. I get that. But, should they, you know, should that be the way to go? But that's about a returner. So they'd have to get somebody to do that. Doesn't have to be a receiver, of course. Could be any position. So we'll see. But, like, I don't know, you know, if you're keeping Cam Sims, then you either are saying Dax Milne is gone and or, you know, or he's not really a seventh receiver. He's just your punt returner, or you're getting a punt returner at a different spot. Just, you know, in general, carrying seven receivers, they did do it recently, but it's not the norm. So I'll be curious to see what happens to Cam Sims. He's been a valuable player, of course, especially on special teams last few years. But, you know, I think that will, I mean, I'm not saying Marcus Kemp is a lock to make the team. I'm just saying if Bieniemy is going to have some of his guys around, you would think a lean would go then towards one of those guys. The tight end position. Okay, so, you know, based on what Rivera was saying back in at the combine, it really seemed like they were in on keeping the group that they had, which sort of seemed a bit odd to me. But they, you know, if they believe that Logan Thomas showed some better mobility later in the year as he got, you know, further and further away from the ACL surgery, I mean, that's a good thing. And I know that they really are intrigued by Armani Rogers, Cole Turner, Austin Hodges has been mentioned. You know, a guy who was on IR last year, but you know, showed some good things in camp. I totally get it. I just, you know, between Logan Thomas's big cap hit and the cap savings you could get, it's roughly 8 million hit, 5 million savings. It's not exactly that, but close enough. That would be something to consider, but. And also, this is a pretty deep draft, it looks like. But at the moment, it appears like they're going to stay with what they have. So that's what we, you know, that's all I can say to you guys on that at the moment. Offensive line. Okay, so this is obviously where there's been a bunch of movement and could be some more. Today, you know, this week, they add Andrew Wiley, right tackle from the Chiefs. Another one who today would not really give us any insight as to how he thinks he'll be used. But my understanding is he would be the tackle with Sam Cosmi moving to guard. And then, just to say with tackle, so you'd have Leno, you would have Wiley, you would have Lucas, and I guess, you know, Cosmi is a fourth guy for you there if needed. I think this precludes them from going out and signing somebody else of note. I don't think it precludes them from drafting a tackle in the first or the second round, right? I mean, even though Wiley signed a three-year deal, have not seen the terms yet, but, you know, presumably there's an out after the second year at least. And, you know, Charles Leno has, if they were to actually release Charles Leno, that would be a pretty big cap savings that would come in. I'm not saying they would do that, but this is also how Charles Leno got released by the Bears. They drafted Tevin Jenkins in the second round, moved on from Leno, got rid of his contract. I feel like Washington's offensive line is, I don't know if it's even better. I just think that they've added new people, and the hope is they can stay healthy. Inside right now, you know, today Tyler Larson officially re-signed. There's that. Nick Gates, who was one of their other free agents, he spoke with us today as well. He told us that he views himself more of a center than a guard, even though he played guard for the Giants a lot last year, and that he thinks he'll play center here mostly. Now, if that's accurate, I don't know that it is, but if that's accurate, and with Tyler Larson back, you got to wonder what this means for Chase Ruye. Ruye's cap hit is $12.4 million. If they release him, they'd save around $8 million. If he's going to come back, it's not going to be at that number. It would be at a pay cut. So the question is, you know, what do they view of Larson and Gates? And by the way, for Larson, you know, he had a kneecap injury in that Giants game that ended up in a tie up at that terrible turf up in the Meadowlands. But I was told that Larson is pretty good. He would, you know, he could probably play in a real game fairly soon if he had to. Obviously he doesn't, but you know, he's in good position. And they were 6-1-1 when he played at center last year. Not saying that Tyler Larson was the key to their year, but just saying he did a pretty good job for them. So I will be intrigued to see, you know, what they do here. And by the way, they can of course draft, you know, the mock drafts I've done so far, I think I've had a interior offensive lineman in the second round each time. So that's where they are there. By the way, Wes Schweitzer has now signed with the Jets. He wasn't coming back here once Gates was signed. But, you know, take that for what it's worth. So we'll see. I think they've still got some moves to make there. And again, if there's a tackle in particular, or even an interior offensive lineman in the first couple of rounds, it would not stun me if they took one, and it would be reasonable, I think, to do so. The defensive line. Obviously not a ton here to worry about, especially now that Daron Payne is under contract. We're still waiting to see what they're going to do with Chase Young's fifth-year option, but they've got a couple of months to get through that. They did re-sign F.A. Obata for, you know, a deal worth up to $3 million, a one-year deal. Totally reasonable. I thought Obata had a really good year last year for what he's asked to do. You know, as we've said before, between Obata, James Smith Williams, Casey Tuhill, really didn't hear too much about missing Chase Young last year, or at least, you know, you missed the upside, but it wasn't, these guys weren't liabilities. Obata could play inside. And, you know, in terms of a guy in the locker room, like, to me, he's the definition of a positive locker room guy, always in a good mood. He was the guy in charge of being the DJ. I have no idea why that happened, but, you know, he clearly had a lot of fun as he enjoyed his teammates and vice versa. So good to bring him back. To that end, I think they almost basically have their room kind of filled, right? I'm doing this off the top of my head. You've got Montez Sweat, Chase Young, Smith Williams, Tuhill, Obata at the end. At tackle, you have John Allen, Daron Payne, Fedarian Mathis, and John Ridgeway. Now, I'm not even counting Shaka Tony or William Bradley King or anybody else on the practice squad. But they've got a group, right? The one thing I could see them still doing, this is probably more of a draft thing, is perhaps drafting a defensive end, in part because, you know, it's conceivable that either Chase Young or Montez Sweat is gone after a year because of the way things are unfolding with the money at that line. So, you know, and plus I think Smith Williams and Tuhill are coming into the last year of their deal. So it wouldn't stun me if they do add a young defensive end for depth and maybe for the future. Linebacker. So, of course, we know what's going on here. They signed Cody Barton this week. Cole Holcomb today, official, he's signing with the Steelers. It's been called a three-year deal, I was told. $18 million max value. I got to see what this deal is like. That seems like, you know, as we all know, you don't buy the first number that we're told. That one seems potentially egregious, but who knows? Holcomb's a totally good player, totally fine. But, you know, I don't think of him as like a, you know, complete stud. And that seems like a good amount of money if it was actually real money for that position this year. So whatever it comes into, he is out. You know, I've told you guys before, my view is Cody Barton got $3.5 million guaranteed with another up to $1 million they could get from incentives. I understand that's not a huge number relative to other NFL positions, but this isn't a team that plays linebackers. They used three linebackers last year on a whopping total of four snaps. Three linebackers, meaning with the 4-3 defense. Cody Barton is here to play Mike linebacker. Now, of course, you never know what's going to happen. If somebody just, you know, I'm making this up completely, but if Bobby Wagner calls you up and says, hey, I really want to play here, I'll play for 1 year, $3 million. Okay, you make it, you work that out. But, I mean, other than that, or there's just some prospect in the draft you have to take, I just don't see that they're going to be adding anybody that I would think, wow, is into the starting competition for sure. Could be, but I just don't, I wouldn't think that would be logical. Again, last year we questioned, did they have one single guy off the bench that they could start if needed? The answer was not really, but so that's why I just don't see all this. I know a lot of people have been asking me about this. I just don't see it as a something to do, but we'll see. Cornerback, on the other hand, I do think this is where probably the biggest place that they could make a move still. Now, they re-signed Danny Johnson, and they picked up Cameron Dantzler off waivers from Minnesota. I think those two guys could be your fourth and fifth cornerbacks. You still have Christian Holmes as well, and, you know, obviously what else they do. But I think, to me, this is where that first or second-round pick, I mean, I don't want to say it would be a lock that they would take a cornerback because you never know. But if I had to pick one spot, I think almost now that would be the one I would pick. Because if you get a cornerback, that would really, you know, whether we're just talking a pure slot or someone on the outside to move Fuller back in or whatever, I think that just goes a long way. And, you know, interestingly, you know, the NFC quarterback situation is down, but not in the division. With Jalen Hurts, Dak Prescott, Daniel Jones, you can say whatever you want about Prescott or Jones. They're totally fine, reasonable quarterbacks. And in the NFC, they're among the better ones. So, I think you got to add a corner. I think that's, to me, where if you're going to make another big investment somehow with either money or draft pick, I think that's the one to make it. By the way, the Commanders have now spent a ton of money over the last few days. A ton of money for them, at least. They're down to a little over $8 million, which is like 26th or 27th in available cap space. So they can, of course, generate more by making restructuring deals and things like that, but or cutting guys. But that's the position. Cornerback is where I think I would make some moves. As far as safety goes, you know, at this point, you know, Jeremy Reeves has been tendered. He'll be back in some capacity. You know, he would just give you more depth. I don't really think they have to do much at safety, you know, between what they have. I think the real question, of course, everybody's wondering is what's up with Cam Curl's extension. You know, haven't heard a ton about it, but honestly, this is one of those deals, you know, that's going to get pushed back till after the draft and later on. There's no real urgency from Washington then to get this done. I know, you know, last year there was this wide receiver frenzy was going on, and that's kind of why people were getting angsty over the McLaurin deal. Plus, he did skip OTAs. We'll see what Cam Curl would do. But in any event, I think that is something to keep an eye on as well. But that's more that than it is like adding players. So that's the gist of what is going on here with these guys. We'll have more to discuss next week. Oh, by the way, one last thing with Daron Payne. Notice this today. Hat tip to Colin Dunphy on Twitter about this. A fifth-year void year was added to Montez Sweat's deal, or sorry, to Daron Payne's deal. That freed up about another $1.5 million and lowered his cap hit to $8.5 million. Again, they kind of need a little bit more money if they want to do anything else, but I imagine they're going to be somewhat quiet at this point up until, you know, they find some deals along the way or perhaps post-draft. All right, enough of me. Let's get to my conversation with Zach Jackson, covers the Browns for The Athletic. Learn more about Jacoby Brissett here on the Standard Group Monthly Podcast. All right, the Washington Commanders have a new quarterback with Jacoby Brissett, so who better to ask what Washington is getting than the guy who covered Jacoby Brissett for his last team, the Cleveland Browns, and that's our Browns insider, Zach Jackson. Zach, busy time for all of us. How are you holding up in free agency so far?
Yeah, it's not bad. Listen, Ben, compared to last year, compared to exactly a week ago, or exactly a year ago, excuse me, when they signed Deshaun Watson out of nowhere. This is like cake. So it's good. And, you know, they did the Deshaun deal on Friday afternoon. They finalized it on Friday night, and on Saturday morning, they signed Jacoby Brissett. And there were so many unknowns then. But, you know, so he was here for 51 weeks, and, you know, he'll be remembered finally in Cleveland. That's for sure.
So, you know, you're right. I mean, obviously you had an unbelievable circumstance last year with everything that went on with Deshaun Watson, and, you know, they bring in Jacoby Brissett to be, all right, we at least have this placeholder here. Usually the placeholder is for a young quarterback versus a guy who's suspended for 11 weeks, but that's the situation you had. And it seemed totally reasonable to have Brissett be that kind of a guy. So based on that, how do you think he ultimately did now that you got his, your sort of first look up close at him as a, you know, relatively speaking, he started 11 games. So you're the starter for most of the year.
Yeah. You know, if you grade him on the Browns curve and you grade him for the circumstances and what he was asked to do, he gets an A, and that might be light. It might be an A plus. Calming presence, likable, always working. You know, from what coaches dream of, right? What it looks like in practice, what it's supposed to sound like on the sideline, goes to the huddle, goes to the formation. And even after he wasn't playing anymore, he was coaching Deshaun Watson. We were watching him. It wasn't just in practice. On Sunday afternoons, he was. So he's a smart guy, Ben. He's seen it all. You go back to his rookie year when the Patriots drafted him and thought they would develop him for a couple years. And then, like, the third week of the season, he's playing a Thursday night game because Brady was suspended and Jimmy G was hurt. So he's been around. He was traded the next year by the Patriots 2 days before the season started. He's seen a little bit of everything. So in terms of what you're going to get in what he's going to do as far as impressing the coaches and make it look like it, I mean, he is a dream, and this is a great situation for him. He played statistically some of his best. He played to the eye test some of his best. He had a really bad interception late in the game that cost him, but the Browns were drawn to his smarts, his experience, the fact that he doesn't turn the ball over. I would say for the most part, he did those things. I would say for the most part, he threw better passes and stayed poised in weird circumstances, both on the field and the whole shitstorm that was the Browns, right? So he probably thinks that he's better and that he can make this a long-term thing. You know, I don't know. The market certainly doesn't say that, right? But he's an impressive guy. He's an entertaining guy. And as far as, like, the storm that's still going on where you are, Ben, like, he's not going to be fazed by any of that. He's going to come in and he's going to do what he's asked and a little bit more to get the team ready to play week in and week out.
Yeah, no, that's a great point about not being fazed by this chaos after what he went through last year. And you mentioned New England, where, you know, they were having a lot of their own chaos at that moment with Brady, and there was always a lot of attention on them as well. So that part is certainly good for sure. I guess it's ultimately, you know, look, when you have a stopgap type guy, which is effectively what he is, like you said, the market reflects that based on, you know, the 1 year deal, relatively light salary, if you're going to claim he's even the starter. It does say something about him. I mean, I guess I'm trying to think, like, if you rank, like, if you put, like, all the, put everybody in the schoolyard pick and say, go draft quarterbacks, I don't know that he's one of the 32 guys that's going to get out there. And that's why it's like you know, there's all these guys. It's like Fitzpatrick was this way, Taylor Heineke now, like, they're kind of good. I don't know. I don't want to have to go to them, but if I do, they're okay, but it's not great. And that's what's kind of, I'm trying to figure out how to process this in the context of Washington. When you have a guy like Sam Howell, who, he's not a first round pick, like, you know, there's hope.
Yeah.
But it's not like, as a stopgap for what? It's not.
I would just tell you that he's big and can throw it a mile. He's not fast, but he's a great quarterback sneaker. You know, he's not as mobile as Taylor Heineke was,
right?
But he will stand in there. He remained the designated sneaker even after Watson came back. Very smart guy. Always wanted to be a basketball player. He came in at 6'2", 6'3", instead of 6'6". You know, big arm. He's refined it. You know, I think he makes the top 32 draft. I think his body of work says that, but that doesn't mean it makes the top 25 draft. That's the way I would answer that. And I would say that, you know, he's an upgrade on a lot of guys. Is he limited? Yes. Is he talented? Yes. I think, knowing what I know about Washington, I think they could have done a lot worse with this. And I don't think he's going to win them the Super Bowl, but I won't be surprised if he starts, and I won't be surprised if he's given him a chance, you know, most weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of crafting a story in my head, which is to say, if you look at it on paper, you could make a case that Washington might have the worst quarterback situation in the league. There's arguments for Tampa Bay and a couple others, but like I'm saying,
Atlanta, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, but at least they're in that sort of discussion.
Sure.
While simultaneously saying they've actually improved over what they had last year when they went 8-8-1 because Carson Wentz, you know, Brissett doesn't have Carson's like upside arm talent, but he's way, way steadier, right? He's not going to have all the mistakes that Wentz had. And, you know, same thing with Taylor Heinicke. I mean, you know, a fun player, thoroughly enjoyed his time, and like he did a really good job coming off the bench. But, you know, offense is kind of chaotic at times, and he's limited in a lot of ways. Brissett could be better than that, and that's what makes it interesting in the context of this team. If he is actually better, does that mean they can get the 10 win? Maybe.
That seems like the ceiling, but I would agree with what you said. I was there week 17. I saw how bad Carson Wentz was. I heard the boos. I saw the people in front of us wait around after the game to boo Carson Wentz off the field. So I'm not saying that Jacoby's not going to go out there and melt against the Eagles, right? But like, no, I think he gives you a chance. Back last June, before we had a verdict, before any of this, I just asked Jacoby, you know, are you a backup? Are you a journeyman? Is this crazy lot? Is this what you've chosen? And he was like, no, I think I'm a starter. And he said, no, I understand everybody can say that, but I've seen a lot in this league. I'm not old. I think I can play better. And I'll tell you what, after the first week of the season, and this could be explained away by the crazy preseason that the Browns had, he did play better. You know, statistically, he was coming in as a top 10, 12 quarterback, and nobody thinks he's that. And like I said, there were times his limitations showed up, and there were times his limitations clashed with Kevin Stefanski's ultra aggressive mindset. But he played better than anyone expected. And from someone who covered a team for a long time, who consistently had the worst quarterback situation in the league or was in the discussion that you mentioned, he was a big upgrade on that. So, yes, if he ends up being a significant upgrade on Carson Wentz and gives the Commanders a chance to win, you know, 9-ish, 10-ish games and be in it, then I will not be surprised.
You know, one thing that I think is interesting, like if you look at Washington's team, they obviously have a pretty good defense, you know, ranked like 9th in DVOA last year. They've kept Daron Payne. If they add a cornerback, you know, they're pretty strong. They could be even better than what they did. They've got playmakers with receivers like Terry McLaurin. You've got a run game with Brian Robinson. They've got to upgrade their offensive line. They've taken steps towards that. But my point is, like, they have a lot of other pieces, and as long as the quarterback, look, you got to make plays, but as long as they also don't, like, contribute to with negative plays, they could be in a good spot. And one thing that stands out to me, I'm looking here on Pro Football Focus has a stat, turnover-worthy passes. Ranking number one is bad here. Taylor Heinicke was number one last year at 6.3%. Jacoby Brissett was 22 at 3.1%. If he doesn't turn the ball over, but can still at least, you know, make enough plays, doesn't have to be spectacular, but, you know, let everybody else do their thing, that by itself could be a winning formula. Did you get a sense that that was Brissett's pretty solid when it comes to, you know, not turning the ball over and making, you know, just unfortunate mistakes?
Yeah, I think that's it. And like I said, he threw a really bad one late in the Chargers game, a game the Browns easily could have won, one of those back and forth games the bad teams find a way to lose, right? I think Stefanski put him in bad situations on a couple of other occasions, but I was doing the same thing last year that you're doing, Ben. I was scrambling, and I think it was like for his career, 1.2% interception rate or something like that, when the average is way higher than that. And like I said, he has seen it. He's played in every kind of offense for different coaches. He's had great receivers. He's been surrounded by crap receivers. You know, last year, his job really was to get the Browns lined up, throw it off play action and run it. Then all of a sudden they have a huge lead in week one. He's played really a bad game, but a smart game, and he has to take them down the field. And he does. You know, they get a penalty. It's third and long. He throws a big one over the middle. He's the first guy to bounce up after he takes the hit. He's the first guy to get everybody in the right spot. And like I said, that even continued I think when they used him as the designated sneaker, Ben, even when Watson came back, that was a little bit throwing him a bone to keep him involved. Right. A lot of it is because he's just a huge bodied person and he gets going forward. But he was so involved in the game. And, you know, not to bore your listeners with what went on, but they had the appeal of Watson, right? They had the whole uncertainty of Watson in the spring. It's a brand new offense for Jacoby too, but Watson's getting double reps in the spring because they know he's not going to play at a certain time. You know, even the first 2.5 weeks of training camp, Watson's the starter, getting all the reps with the ones. He doesn't get any reps with the ones until August 15th. So like he has handled all of that. And when you look at numbers, they don't tell the story on the quarterback, but he has played enough and in enough different circumstances that I think you can paint at least a fair picture with his numbers, right? We're not talking about a 3-game sample size or him taking over some electric offense. Like he's played on good teams. He's played on bad teams. He's played on short notice and he's played last year fairly well with a team that didn't meet its expectations. But for those 11 games, nobody would tell you that the offense was the problem. The reason the Browns only won 4 of them.
Gotcha. I'll get you out of here on this. You, of course, because you cover Cleveland, means you were also there for Baker Mayfield, who just signed with Tampa Bay today for roughly 1 year, $8.5 million. You know, it could be some funny money, but that was the terms announced. Brissett got 1 year for $8 million. Andy Dalton, who obviously was up in your way as with the Bengals and AFC North for many years, he signed for a little bit less than that. Looks like he's like likely the backup in Carolina. Based on those like options, you can factor in the money if you want. Like, do you like Brissett better than those other guys if you're in sort of Washington spot of maybe you need a vet, maybe you need a guy to sit if the kids are ready? How do you kind of view that aspect of this?
I would tell you, for one, that Jacoby Brissett played significantly better in 2022 in the same offense that Baker Mayfield did in 2021. Significant. Right. And beyond that, I would just say it's completely different situations, right? I think Sam Howell is more similar to Baker. I think the Bucs and Baker are saying, look, if this works, then we found a guy for nothing. But mostly if it doesn't, we gave him a shot. We think he can get the ball to our guys and we'll play for 2024, right? While we get our salary cap right.
Right.
Whereas I think the Commanders are like, obviously they'd love it to work with Howell, but they bring in a guy who can help Howell, who can be better than that in a pinch and give them a chance. I probably no delusions of winning the Super Bowl, but I do think I see some similarities on the roster, right? A good defense, you know, a system that nobody's going to be asking him to be Superman, right? Get the ball to your playmakers. I think the Commanders have a few of them. So, I think for the bargain, that's right. And when I saw that today, it's honestly not a team I was really thinking of. I kind of expected him to go to Arizona with his old quarterback's coach and just hold the fort down for Kyler there. But when I saw that come across, I thought that's a good fit. And I would just, you know, tell your listeners that Jacoby Brissett is a good person, a likable person, and, you know, he will do his darndest. He wants to be a starter. He wants to succeed. And he will not cut any corners. He will not sabotage any teammates in the media. He will not do any of the shit that guys do. He will be a likable figure. And you know, hopefully that will translate to, you know, him having success in the field. Because I think everybody in Cleveland, not just us that cover the team, but inside the organization, they're really rooting for the guy.
I mean, that is great to hear, especially when the last year at this point, the veteran quarterback they added their own, his former owner was just trashing him all over the place. So this is, sounds like a very different deal. Zach, I greatly appreciate the time. I know you're busy and got you here at the last second. So I appreciate that. He is at Akron Jackson on Twitter. Fantastic Twitter handle there, and go read him and his coverage on The Athletic. Obviously Deshaun Watson is going to be a big story this year. So check him out on The Athletic. Zach, man, I really appreciate it. Have a good rest of free agency, whatever that means for you guys.
Sounds good, Ben. Talk to you soon.
All right. Many thanks to Zach Jackson for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast, checking me out on Twitter, on the website. Greatly appreciate it all. Get some rest. We still got a lot more to go through here this offseason. Not to mention, the owners' meeting is coming up. We'll see what happens there. That's it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.